Saddle up your horses. Well, welcome everyone to the Robin Walter Show here on the Red Sky Radio Network. God bless you today. Let me just get a couple of things out of the way because I always forget them. If you want to write me, you certainly may. RedSkyRadio777@gmail.com. It's RedSkyRadio777@gmail.com. If you would like to pick up this program via podcast, you may do it one of two ways. You can go to any of your podcast venues and type in Robin Walter Show. If you go to Rumble, which has an increased listenership all the time on Rumble, the Robin Walter Show, you're going to pull up two programs. You're going to see a picture of me, my mugshot with a cowboy hat. That is this program. And if you see the picture of the Bible, my glasses, and a gavel, I no longer serve as a judge pro tem, but I did at the time that picture was shot. That is for the Sunday morning program with Robin Walter, a program which I highly encourage you to hear, not just this week, but next week, which would be, what, 18th and 19th, depending. Well, I don't know. I'm not sure which one of those dates, 18th or 19th of May, a program you will not want to miss called Israel, Hamas, and Ziklag. Yeah, goodness sakes, I got up this morning and wrote it out crazy and fast. It was just all epiphany, revelation, whatever you want to call it, for next week. This week, however, I have a program that is going to all come down to one announcement at the end of the program. With the exception of a few little things I'm going to cover here at the beginning, I'm going to quote a number of people, which points to something which I've said for many years, and it now is revealed and it is out in the open as to the future of this country. So with that in mind, it's not a hook to try to just get you to listen to everything. It's just the way this particular program is formed. But starting out, I couldn't ignore the fact that the United Methodist Church totally trashed the Bible. Far as I'm concerned, gave a finger to God, a fist to God's face, when they determined that homosexuality is not incompatible with Christian teaching. And in fact, now queers can be pastors, deacons, elders, whatnot, in the United Methodist Church. Well, the United Methodist Church is no longer united because you had split-offs a long time ago because they started to go left. That's how you ended up with a Free Methodist Church. But today's church, John Wesley would rise from his grave and hurl at where this church is. And it's a particularly loathsome to me because I spent 22 years of my life in the Methodist Church. I didn't leave until I got saved. Until I became a Christian is when I left the church. That should tell you something. And that was quite a while ago. And unbelievably, the vote to make queerdom normal and queerdom a non-factor in the ordination of people so they can get up there in their multicolored robes and now their training robes and whatever and preach whatever they have and then engage in counterfeit marriage and all that thing stuff. The vote in favor of doing that, it was really, really close. 523-161. Overwhelming support for queerdom. Now, in all fairness, to whom? Me, I guess, because I'm bringing in a story. A lot of people had bolted. Bolt, meaning as in throw up, but also bolt in the sense of leaving that denomination because this was coming. And so if you're in that church, Get out. Don't waste another penny. God's not going to bless one dime of tithe to the United Methodist Church. Forget it. It's gone. And you're in disobedience to stay in a church like that because it's very clear you can save the lost, but you can't save the reprobate. You see, biblically speaking, the reprobate is the one who has known God, known his ways, and turned from it. And then, according to Romans 1, no longer has any tolerance for the knowledge of God, even the knowledge of God in his conscience. And their conscience ends up seared. So you can save the lost, which is what John Wesley was all about. God bless that circuit-riding preacher who covered... No, I don't think. He did some, but I'm thinking of Asbury. He was probably the Methodist circuit rider that covered thousands of miles on a horse to preach to the lost. Because you can save the lost. You cannot save the reprobate. I just have to say this. Yes, I vote Republican, but the stupidity and reactionary attitude of some Republicans is flat out embarrassing. And they're pushing through and passing by a vote in the House of 320-91. Probably the 91 were Democrats against this, but a lot of Democrats voted for it. International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance. This needs to be defeated. This isn't about, you can't forbid under our Constitution. I have to look at this both ways. If people want to have their hate speech towards Jews, which are all by Democrats in Congress, they can have their hate speech towards Jews. Because you can't stop there without then forbidding all other things. And it's against Muslims, like it would be in Europe. And then you can't say anything negative about Democrats or who knows. That's not what our Constitution actually fully supports. What others would call hate speech, not necessarily because there's any hate involved, but the person who's offended hates what the other person is saying. I mean, I'm accused of hate speech, but I speak the truth, and my speech is considered hate speech, not because I have any animus within me on that particular topic, but others hate what I'm saying. I provide the speech, they provide the hate. Pretty simple, really. But this thing by the Republicans actually would make criminal certain portions of the Bible. Anything that makes a reference to Jews killing Jesus, which they certainly were a strong factor, and you can't deny that. The Romans wanted to let Jesus go. Of course, there were a ton of Jews that didn't want Jesus killed. But it was the scribes, the elders, and those who were jealous and envious because they were losing their positions of power and influence among the people that wanted Jesus dead. So that saying that now becomes a hate speech thing towards Jews. Trust me, I don't support hate speech, but criminalizing it actually has adverse consequences, and not the least of which is the misapplication of the law itself. Another thing real quickly here, Dr. Joseph Mercola. Oh, my gosh. I keep saying I'm not going to do any more stories on this, and this is going to be brief. But he states that there is what is growing and becoming a veritable avalanche of COVID shot, vaccine shot-based dementia. The dementia, this is amazing. It doesn't surprise me. I didn't take the jab. As far as I was concerned, the jab would be the stab that would put you on the slab. That was what my thought happened to be correct, partly influenced from my wife, but she was onto it right away. Not because we're so smart. We're not. We just try to hear what God would say. But to those of you who have taken it, especially multiple ones, you need to go to Scripture and read the passage that talks about if you drink any deadly thing, it will not harm you. You did it in good faith, some of you. Some of you did it in ignorance. Some of you did it in abject fear. But the fact of the matter is that Scripture you need to apply to your own life to save you from what appears to be a significant connection between the explosive expansion of dementia among those who took the stab and the jab. Okay. Biden, oh gosh, 148 times just this year. Just this year. What are we in? We're in the starting the fifth month of the year. 148 times they've had to fix Biden's speeches. We know he's a moron. We know he's an idiot. He has no brains. He has no guts. And he has no morals. He's a big stinking zero. And do I say that to put him down? No, I just say it because it's the truth. I'm not afraid of saying the truth, even if the truth is a little bit salty. But this piece, it amazes me how certain elements of evil coalesce. How do certain people who have very strong feelings in some area, they may be good or they may be bad, but let's say they're not good, but they're very different than other people who have different evil inclinations, but then they coalesce. They sort of come together. Now, I know what the Muslim faith talks about homosexuality. Look, you don't support homosexuality when you're throwing queers off from buildings to bash their brains 13 stories below on the concrete. There's no place for that. I really have no place for the true Muslims, have no place for abortion, killing innocent children in the womb. They, of all people, know that the future belongs to the fertile. The more children they have, the greater and quicker the probability that they will control a good portion of the world, maybe all of it, who knows. They got Europe. Europe's down the toilet. Europe's gone. Europe's done. It's over for Europe. You can't find you can hardly find a major city anywhere in Europe that isn't predominantly illegal or legal migrants who they just let in, or any city in Europe of any significant size where the number one baby name is anything other than Muhammad. They're done. London toast, Germany toast, France toast, Netherlands toast. The only ones hanging on strongly seems to be Hungary and to some extent Poland. The Eastern Bloc nations somehow get it more than the Western Bloc does. But to my point, so we have a Palestinian organization now working for queer liberation. Now, I would love to launch into a thing about the Palestinians, the relationship to the Amalekites. This is all what I was given in the early wee morning hours this morning, but it's not for this program. It's for the Sunday morning program with Robin Walter next week. The one for this week was already done. It's in the queue. The stations already have it. It's going out, which is good. Talking about the necessity that you must redeem the time. You must redeem the time. You do well to hear it. But this coalescing of supposedly Muslim Palestinian culture with all things queer and sodomistic, I mean, this is just hard to get my brain around, except that the Palestinians here are not really true Muslims. They're just Palestinians, which have their roots being in Gaza, being the Amalekites, which is a little tip-off on next week's Sunday morning program. So what do they do? Well, let's take Massachusetts. And the Northampton Center for the Arts. Notable place, Northampton Center for the Arts. Publicly funded. Here are your tax dollars. Go to queer advocacy. So they do a story time that's called Queer Story Time for Palestine. That's the event. Nobody seems to be having any problem with this, but then again, it's Massachusetts. So they have this event that talks about dancing, celebrating Palestinian culture, and learning about queer heroes and doing arts and crafts. This is in quote, this is their language. dancing, celebrating Palestine culture, learning about queerios, and doing arts and crafts. So who is the one who's the head of this? A drag queen person called Lil Miss Hot Mess. I know some of the stations you hear this are Christian stations, but that's what she goes by, Lil Miss Hot Mess. Get used to this garbage, because it's expanding like crazy, because we don't do anything about it in this country. So in the video, it says Lil Miss Hot Mess is reading her book entitled, If You're a Drag Queen and You Know It. That's the name of her book. And then, with a room full of kids, she orders the kids to chant, quote, If you're a drag queen and you know it, shout Free Palestine. Oh, my gosh. Okay, more bodies, the result of Joey who? Brain dead skunk in the middle of the road, corn pop Biden. He's the one who essentially forced, under threat of withdrawing arms supplies, forced Israel to keep open a border crossing for alleged humanitarian aid. Okay? This is at the Kerem Shalom border. So Israel keeps it open. But as long as Israel does good things, Hamas is looking like the crap that they are. Gaza looks like the crap that they are. The Palestinians look like the crap that they are. I make no apologies for that. And he wants to bring Palestinians to this country. Get your guns, get your ammo, learn how to use them safely, wisely, and legally, because you will need it. More on that at the end of this hour, because that's what everything leads up to from this point forward. But why are there more deaths at the hands of Joey, I'm your left-wing puppet, Biden? Because Israel complied, and Hamas, which doesn't want the humanitarian aid that they can't get a hold of and sell and cheat and consume for themselves, doesn't make it to the people, they want to be seen as continuous victims. And so what do? They shell and rocket the Kerem Shalom border gate and kill three IDF soldiers working there to keep the border now open for humanitarian aid to enter. They shell the soldiers working to help Hamas's own, Gazans' own citizens, the Gazanians. And I got to share something. This is an interjection. I had a person come unglued at me this last week for using the word Gazanian. Why do you have to give people names? Well, I give names that fit. Why can't you just call them Gazans, not Gazanians? I said, because, and I thought this is actually pretty insightful. I mean, something that I felt like God gave me. Gaza's a proxy for Iran. Right? Right. Everybody knows that. Hamas is a proxy for Iran specifically. And what are Iranians, called? Iranian. And if you're a proxy for the Iranians, then you're a Gazanian. I thought it was pretty cute. This guy came absolutely unglued to the point of swearing at me viciously because I didn't call Gazanians Gazans. They weren't getting their due respect. Well, when 90% of the people, of the alleged civilians in Gaza, support Hamas, then wipe them out. Take out the Amalekites like you were supposed to do, Israel, in Deuteronomy 25 and 1 Samuel chapters 13 through 15, which you failed to do, and that's why you still have the problem today. But I digress, because I wanted to, I guess. But these are just more deaths at the hands of Joey Cornpop. He's got more body bags lined up for him to account for at the end of the age, at the great white throne judgment where Joey finds his destination and no rosary is going to save him because he can't even spell the word, and that's not how you get saved anyway. But the guy is so lost, so far gone. If he's truly lost, he could be saved. If he's a reprobate, forget it, quoting from earlier in the program. Now, I'm going to now read a couple of pieces which will lead up to something that just needs to be shared of huge significance, something that happens to be the beginning of a manifestation of that which I've predicted for many years will happen here in the United States. And now something particularly in the form of, well, polls that will support that prediction or the probability of that prediction, because it hasn't happened yet. But to get there, I want to read for some people who have written things. I don't typically read from other people's articles, but I do when they can say it better. I have no pride in this. They are more articulate. I have no pride in this. They get to a point, maybe just simply better made than I might say it while I'm winging it here on the air. I don't actually wing it. I do pray that God would give me the words, but that doesn't mean I don't launch into the flesh, and doesn't mean that I've thought about everything before it goes out my mouth. But it is what it is. This is a piece recently released by a man by the name of Gib Kerr on a piece called Uncancel Robert E. Lee, The Toxicity of Cancel Culture. This is the first piece I'm going to read from, which will just summarize where we are. And then I'm going to read from a piece from WorldNet Daily, and we get to the conclusion of this. It will no longer shock you what I'm going to say at the end. Mr. Kerr states that cancel culture is all about tearing things down. It's inherently destructive. It builds nothing. It creates nothing. It only destroys. Like the Vandals who destroyed Rome, cancel culture is destroying American culture. Systematically, it seeks to target and eliminate America's heroes. It rages against symbols of our cherished traditions, urging its hateful mobs to burn it down, fueled by anger, bitterness, envy, and vindictiveness. It is the same mean-spirited mindset that led French revolutionaries to reject their past, create a new calendar starting with year zero, and guillotine 40,000 of their fellow citizens in a single year. The widespread growth of cancel culture in America, with its unforgiving intolerance of all things past, instills a sense of terror, particularly in young people, that they too may be canceled for saying or even thinking dissenting ideas. This leads to massive self-censorship, the absolute squashing of debate and civil discourse, and ultimately to the suppression of free and creative thinking. Cancel culture rejects the Western and Christian notions of grace, forgiveness, and reconciliation. In its place, cancel culture promotes violence, terror, intimidation, intolerance, and retribution. Rooted in Karl Marx's twisted ideology that explicitly encourages violence and terror, to abolish private property, to destroy religion, and even abolish the family, cancel culture seeks to fundamentally transform society. But transform it into what? Haven't we learned from over a century of experience what Marxism, with cancel culture as its constant accomplice, produces? Are the deaths of 100 million victims of communism not instructive enough? We know from experience where it all leads and what happens when society is fundamentally transformed. And fundamentally transformed here, I'm just going to say put in quotations because that was Barack Obama's objective. Because Barack Obama is at root a Saul Alinsky radical, a diehard communist, the worst president in the history of the United States, until he got somebody even worse, Joe Biden, who he informs and who channels Barack in the decisions that he supposedly makes. Continuing, Obama famously said in his 2008 campaign that he sought to fundamentally transform America. And now we see the fruits of his labor. Thanks to people like Obama, America is more divided than at any time since the Civil War. Cancel culture follows Saul Alinsky's infamous Rules for Radicals, particularly his rule to, quote, pick the target, freeze it, personalize it, and polarize it, end quote. Interestingly, Hillary Clinton wrote her senior thesis at Wellesley College on Alinsky and his tactics. Beginning with the Clintons, cancel culture has become embedded in modern political discourse. But it extends beyond politics. It reaches into the depths of our cultural identity to erase our traditions, our beliefs, particularly our religious beliefs. And the men and women who established our uniquely successful American culture, a culture, by the way, that is actually unsurpassed in human history in terms of liberty, innovation, and high standards of living. Andrew Breitbart said that politics are downstream from culture. Now, after decades of Marxist long march through the institutions, from academia to the media, entertainment, organized religion, and even the military and corporate America now, our culture has grown increasingly hostile toward the past. And that toxic culture is now influencing American politics. The canceling of Robert E. Lee is a classic example of the radical assault on Americans' heroes. Lee was widely hailed as one of America's greatest examples of noble character as recently as 20 or 30 years ago. He was exalted for his virtue, his devotion to duty, his sense of honor, his Christian faith, his courage, and his flawless, gentlemanly conduct. Then the haters came for him. Cancel culture picked Lee as their target, using Alinsky's tactics. They froze him, personalized him, and polarized him. Cancel culture demands perfection of our historical figures. But we know that human perfection is unrealistic, and they know it too. They're not interested in hailing any heroes of perfection because, with the exception of Jesus Christ, no such heroes exist. And they certainly are not fans of Jesus. They simply want to destroy Lee and other similar heroes, and they won't stop with Lee. They are now targeting George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Christopher Columbus, and countless others. Yet the destructive wave of cancel culture only creates a void. It leaves an emptiness and an absence of heroes and noble examples for our children and grandchildren to aspire to emulate. And who or what does cancel culture propose to fill that void? Karl Marx, Lenin, Stalin, Mao, Castro? The list goes on. Lee deserves to be viewed in the context of his times. And in his time, he would be considered one of the more enlightened Americans for his views of slavery and blacks. Keep in mind that in the 1800s, blacks were not allowed to vote or serve on a jury in almost every single state in the Union, including the northern states. Women were not allowed to vote anywhere. Was Lee racist by today's standards? Yes. By today's standards, yes. But so was Abraham Lincoln and almost everyone else. Thankfully, we have come a long way since then, but it's not fair to apply today's standards to people who lived a long time ago in vastly different times. Are the sanctimonious proponents of cancel culture so morally superior that they would have behaved differently or held modern views on race if they lived 150 years ago? How do you think our descendants will view us in 150 years for our tolerance of slave labor in China to make iPhones, or child labor in Africa to mine rare earth minerals, for electric vehicles for us, and the destruction of the planet from wasteful consumption? And I'm going to add something here. How about abortion? 150 years ago, will everybody who ever supported abortion, no matter how good or bad they might have been in other respects, be absolutely destroyed historically because they ignorantly supported something that is so abominably contrary to the Word of God? Will they not be treated being in the context of their times? These are my inserts here. But our task today is to expose cancel culture for what it is, the angry, intolerant, vindictive, destructive attack on heroes, values, and traditions that made America great. Don't go away. This is part one. Part deux comes after the break.
The Robin Walter Show is a listener-supported program. Your contribution goes to help as many people as possible to hear that the Word of God has answers to help you survive and even thrive in the dark days ahead in this country. We pledge to bring you the critical information you need to make informed decisions in this age where big tech and big media have conspired to rid our country of everything Christian. Please send your support to Red Sky Radio, P.O. Box 99, Wickenburg, Arizona, 85358. That's Red Sky Radio, P.O. Box 99, Wickenburg, Arizona, 85358. Thank you.
Well, I think my dog's a Democrat. And it breaks my heart to have to say an ugly thing like that. But there's a big old pile of evidence that all points towards the fact my dog might be a Democrat.
We are back. This is Robin Walder with the Robin Walder Show, part of the Red Sky Radio Network. Okay, the next piece I'm going to read to you comes from WorldNet Daily, at least excerpts, as I make my own inserts. And leading up to the shocker, that may not be a shocker at all, announcement here at the end of this program. This piece, titled from WorldNet Daily, which interestingly, I have read for a long time, and I finally did my part and just subscribed to the magazine about 3 years ago. I would encourage you to consider it as well. They are a victim of the cancel culture that I just got done reading about before the break. One of the great news organizations, Google doesn't want to have anything to do with YouTube. They demonetize them because they don't like the truth that WorldNet Daily shares. Of course, calling what WorldNet Daily shares mistruth, misinformation, disinformation, and now malinformation. That's the latest invention by the left to further marginalize people who speak the truth. So, quote, "Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter." The famous biblical passage from Isaiah offers a chilling but disarmingly accurate characterization of today's Democratic Party, which has descended to its darkest, most perverse, and pathological low point in history, except perhaps for its fierce defense of slavery until the Civil War put that to an end. Whether viewed through the prism of power politics, ideology, psychology, or religious faith, the Democratic Party of 2024 has become a daily showcase of exactly the kind of remorseless lying, gaslighting, and projection that is calling evil good and good evil, that is condemned in the Bible. In fact, Democrats' 180-degree moral inversion has become so reliably extreme that it has evolved into something of a crystal ball, allowing one to discern not only what the far-left ruling elites are secretly doing right now, but also what they intend to do next. How can that be? By carefully noting the crimes, conspiracies, and corruption which Democrat leaders falsely accuse conservatives of perpetrating, one can gain accurate insight into the very crimes and conspiracies and corruption that they themselves are covertly pursuing right now and planning for the future. Consider. Democrats accuse Republicans of being lawless, a claim epitomized by their massively lawless campaign against GOP's current leader, President Trump, who in a short period of time has been accused of over 100 different crimes in left-wing jurisdictions nationwide, all in an effort to block his re-election and make sure he dies in prison. Yet despite the prevailing opposite land narrative, Democrats have proven to be the lawless party, abusing America's best in the world legal system and its wild persecution of Trump. Ironically, while Democrats claim the 45th president is a big-time criminal, in reality, it is Joe Biden, America's 46th president, who heads up an actual crime family involving at least 9 family members, as the House Oversight Committee has revealed. far worse than Democrats' persecution of Donald Trump and simultaneous defense of epically corrupt man like Joe Biden is their mass criminal prosecutions and imprisonment of hundreds of innocent, patriotic Americans for simply protesting the theft of the 2020 election. In so doing, the Biden administration has embraced a kind of unthinkable political weaponization of the legal system that previously was associated with the most brutal and corrupt third world dictators. Ultimately, the hundreds of unjust January 6 prosecutions, convictions, and lengthy incarcerations are simply part of Democrats' appalling campaign to brand not just Trump, but his supporters as terrorists and insurrectionists attempting to overthrow America's constitutional system of government. But being in opposite land, that analysis is not only nonsensical, it is, in fact, precisely opposite to the truth. Attempting to undermine the American constitutional system for which the elites have barely disguised contempt is precisely what Democrat leadership does 24/7. They daily accuse Republicans, as well as essentially the entire American middle class, of being racist, bigots, white supremacists, when in reality, of course, it's the Democrats who have historically, generation after generation, practiced and championed overt racism. Democrats were the party of slavery, while the Republican Party came into existence in 1854 explicitly as the anti-slavery party. Democrats opposed Reconstruction after the Civil War. Democrats founded the Ku Klux Klan in 1865 and likewise were the main force behind the Jim Crow laws for many decades thereafter. Now fast forward to the Civil Rights Movement of the 1960s. The great American middle class had largely been persuaded by the noble, nonviolent movement capped off by Reverend Martin Luther King's stirring I Have a Dream speech in August of 1963, that they too, like King, desired to live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. Yet the following year, it was Senate Democrats who filibustered the historic 1964 Civil Rights Act for an astounding 60 days, the longest filibuster in U.S. history, in a desperate attempt to block the anti-segregation bill's passage. Today, 60 years later in 2024, it is still Democrats, not Republicans, who are utterly obsessed with hiring and firing, promoting and demoting, rewarding and punishing, favoring and rejecting people solely on the basis of their skin color. Long forsaken by the left is the entire civil rights movement and MLK's cherished dream of a colorblind America. And yet, according to the party that champions slavery, opposed Reconstruction, pushed Jim Crow laws, and tried desperately to kill the 64 Civil Rights Act, the United States of America, hands down the least racist nation in all of history, is now considered by the left to be irredeemably racist. And all because of those racist, white supremacist, Klan-loving Republicans. That is what it means to live in opposite land. Democrats perennially accuse Republicans of voter suppression for insisting people identify themselves as U.S. citizens before voting in elections that will largely determine America's future. As Kamala Harris alleged in 2020, Republicans, by supporting voter ID, are doing everything in their power to suppress and attack the voting rights of people of color. Incredibly, Democrats' opposition to voter ID laws persists in an area where the Biden administration has intentionally engineered a massive foreign invasion of non-citizens into America, bringing in well over 10 million illegals so far during Biden's term, all for the ultimate and obvious purpose of creating millions of new Democratic voters. And I should add, none of which will actually need to show ID at the poll, because the states stupidly give them driver's licenses, which at the same time in the application also allows for voter registration. So we have millions of illegal aliens now registered to vote in the United States. That's my insertion. Back to the quote, Democrats' end game is to transform America into a permanent one-party state perpetually run by them. So while voter ID is obviously more necessary than ever for preserving election integrity and thereby preserving the nation itself, Democrats oppose it. But what sort of reason, what might one ask, could Democrats possibly concoct to justify opposition to such a clearly needed, universally accepted, and common sense measure? Unfortunately for Democrats who like Biden and Harris, voter ID laws are there only to suppress black voter turnout, their sole argument is transparently racist, since its unavoidable implication is that people of color are somehow too poor, too ignorant, too incompetent, or too stupid to obtain a government-issued ID. Yet no one in America can open a bank account, cash a check, fly in an airplane, rent a car, stay in a hotel, pick up a doctor's prescription, or in general navigate this life without a government ID. Nevertheless, Biden has repeatedly called voter ID laws, which ironically polls show blacks overwhelmingly support, calls that the equivalent of Jim Crow 2.0. And I might insert here, blacks overwhelmingly support voter ID for one particular reason. It's a pushback, it's a refutation that they supposedly are too poor, too incompetent, too stupid to find some way to get a valid government ID. No wonder. I'd push back, too, if somebody's calling me stupid, incompetent, ignorant, calls essentially a whole race of people ignorami. This is how racist they are. Okay, I got to cut out my insertions here. Thousands of America's children are being groomed and seduced into undergoing horrendous transgender amputation surgeries and other unthinkable and irreversible medical, quote, treatments, end quote, that literally destroy their lives, leading many to commit suicide. Indeed, Medical News Today in 2022 reported on new research showing transgender teens are more than 700% likely to commit suicide as other teenagers. Now, these are the ones who've made the transition, so to speak. Yet Biden, whose administration enthusiastically supports and funds with taxpayers' money the mass hysteria transgender craze, recently condemned as close to sinful the efforts of good people to stop the mass mutilation of America's children. Likewise, a gender-affirming psychologist, Dr. Harriet Wims, clinical director for the Village Family Support Center in Baltimore, has announced publicly that parents who oppose cutting the breasts off or the organs off their children, those parents as ones having a mental illness, and to which Biden agrees. Once again, in opposite land, the people merrily leading children into lifelong misery, disability, conflict, and suicide accuse loving, protective parents and other right-thinking people who oppose the demonic transgender craze of being sinful and having a mental illness. That's right. They call the parents who are trying to protect, the people who are trying to protect children from being mutilated and just having their bodies destroyed, they are the ones that are sinful. This is what they're calling evil good and good evil. All right. In opposite land, climate alarmist leftist globalists and Democrats accuse Republicans, most of whom oppose Biden's wanton throttling of America's fossil fuel industries, of helping make the earth uninhabitable by driving gasoline-powered automobiles and heating their homes with natural oil or gas. But in the real world, it's the left's radical climate change policy that will, if pursued to their desired conclusion, result in a level of global starvation, disease, and death unprecedented in recorded history. And I've got to skip through this because I'm going to run out of time. But the fact is, this is a place left-wing Democrats controlling the nation's government and culture accuse traditional values Republicans of being lawless, fascist, mentally ill, election-rigging extremists who embrace violence to overturn this nation's lawfully elected constitutional government. Yet that turns out to be a perfect mirror image of the accusers and a clear picture of what they are planning for the United States of America. For you can't speak out against what's going on in this country without the left attacking you. For during COVID-19, the leftist authoritarians tried to quell your freedom of speech, of expression and assembly if you didn't line up for the vaccine, and it's endless boosters. If you speak up against letting kids undergo transgender treatments, the left says you want kids to die. If you stand up for the unborn, you're anti-woman. If you advocate for Judeo-Christian values, you're a Christian nationalist. That's what it is to live in opposite land. And I did edit this piece as I read through it in the interest of time. But going back to the beginning, it says this: woe, meaning woe unto those who do this, that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness to light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. This is called psychological projection, meaning everything you accuse others of doing, that which you are doing and which you intend to do, which exactly describes that's the defining characteristic of the Democrat Party. Now, the last piece I'm going to read from quickly is going to come from somebody that is interesting. You'll find him, Tim Allen, right, from Home Improvement, Last Man Standing. I love this guy. There are a few notable people that stand up for the right and stand up strongly. Another one's Pat Sajak, actually the Wheel of Fortune. He's brilliant. He is so smart. Sits on the board. I think he's the president of Hillsdale College, or he sits on the board at any rate. But I want to quote from Tim Allen here, and then we get to our revelation at the end. Quote, "If you don't think America will virtually disappear with another 4 years of the Biden crime family regime, you best think again. Here are some points to ponder prior to the November election, especially to my friends on the fence, like moderate Democrats, libertarians, independents, the never-Trump Republicans, and those thinking of walking away from the Democratic Party. So women are upset at Trump's naughty words, but they are the ones who bought 80 million copies of 50 Shades of Grey. Not one feminist has defended Sarah Huckabee Sanders. It seems women's rights only matter if those women are liberal. No border walls, no voter ID laws. Did you figure it out yet? But wait, there's more. Chelsea Clinton got out of college and got a job at NBC paying $900,000 per year, while her mom flies around the country speaking against and about white privilege." And just like that, they went from being against foreign interference in our elections to allowing non-citizens to vote in our elections. President Trump's wall costs less than the Obamacare website. Let that sink in. Now, mind you, I'm still quoting Tim Allen. "We are one election away from open borders, socialism, gun confiscation, and full-term abortion nationally. We are fighting evil. The Democrats sent more troops and armament to arrest Roger Stone than they sent to defend Benghazi. 60 years ago, Venezuela was fourth on the World Economic Freedom Index. Today, they are 179th. And their citizens are dying of starvation. It took only 10 years, and Venezuela was destroyed by socialists. Nancy Pelosi invited illegal aliens to the State of the Union. President Trump invited victims of illegal aliens to the State of his Union." Let that sink in. A socialist is basically a communist who doesn't have the power to take everything from their citizens at gunpoint yet. How do you walk 3,000 miles across Mexico without food or support and then show up at our border 100 pounds overweight and with new Nikes and a cell phone? This is still Tim speaking. Alexander Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, wants to ban cars, ban planes, give out universal income, and thinks socialism works. She calls Donald Trump crazy, but Bill Clinton paid $850,000 to Paula Jones to get her to go away. The FBI never raided his lawyer's office. The same media telling me Hillary Clinton had a 95% chance of winning now tells me Trump's approval ratings are low. The problem with socialism, quoting Margaret Thatcher, is sooner or later you will run out of other people's money. Maxine Waters opposes voter ID laws. She thinks they are racist. But you need a photo ID to attend Maxine Waters' town hall meetings. As President Donald J. Trump said, "They are not after me. They are after you. I am just in their way. My goodness sakes. That is where we are. All as a prelude and a preface to my last story of the day. I'm not a big fan of polls. Most of the polls in this country are run by the left, fact-checking, Snopes, whatever. The Snopes are run by a couple of libtards. And so I don't give much credence to polls because they usually don't reflect what people think. They frame the questions to get the answer. The pollsters frame the questions that they want to get the answers to so that they can use the poll to supposedly influence the public. It's neither accurate nor genuine. It's not transparent. You don't see the questions that the pollsters ask when they are trying to generate and direct public opinion as opposed to reflecting a public opinion. With respect to one poll, which I have said for 10 years, is the only truly ultimately reliable poll in the United States, and that's the Rasmussen poll, the Rasmussen Reports. And they had a document here that was released just this last week. It's a stunning new poll to them, not to me. I have anticipated this. I fully expect it. I have not wanted it. There are things that you absolutely know are going to happen. You're convinced they're going to happen. And you may share it, and people thinking that you share it has people thinking that you want it. That is not true of me. I've seen this for a long time. I've shared it for a long time. But this poll reveals this. And now you've heard for 35 or 40 minutes the lead up to this and why we are here. 41% of America's population is approximately 100 million people. It's actually just a little over 100 million people. The Rasmussen poll, the only reliable poll out there, truly reliable in and out, reveals now more than 100 million Americans, 41% of our population, expect civil war within 5 years or less. 5 years or less. Now, the civil war is something that I have not felt was absolutely unavoidable, except in one circumstance. What I have felt and have said for 15 years, it goes back a long time, is that secession, states leaving this country, is inevitable. But if the ones who leave are the left, i.e. Trump wins, California leaves, good riddance, and Hawaii, New York, hey, get out of here, who cares? We can survive fine without you. If they leave, there will be no civil war. The remaining country of patriots will do just fine and will be blessed by God. If it's the other way around, however, that the left wins and the right wants to secede, the left will not let the right leave because the right is a part of the country that works. The right is a part of the country that pays taxes. The right is a part of the country that has most natural resources. The right is a part of the country that has the most religious observation and faithfulness in being committed to their faith in all faiths, frankly, than the left. So if we have civil war, it won't be because the left leaves and secedes because Trump has won. It will be because Biden or some left-wing operative that they parachute in, like Gavin Newsom, wins, and now we must leave. That is when there will be civil war, because we will be on the defensive, because they're not going to let us get away with all the oil wells, wheat fields, ports, and all those things that would comprise the states that would be gone. This has been my analysis for some time. So there is a circumstance where I don't think civil war is inevitable, but there's a circumstance under which I think civil war is absolutely inevitable, and it will be a defensive action by good people in good states against bad people in bad states, which control the national government. And the good states are simply a conviction of sin. That's right. The good states will be a conviction of sin against the bad states and the bad people that run the bad states and the bad federal government. 100 million people. So I will ask you, leave you with this question. If you believe that 100 million plus people are correct, what should you be doing in the next month to the next 5 years, if this is correct? What would you be doing spiritually, financially? How do you relate with your children, your neighbors? What do you do politically? And pastors, what the heck do you preach from your pulpits? This is where we are in this country. But God's brought you to just such a time as this. As with Esther, you were created to take a stand. And having done all to stand, stand therefore. If you spent years advocating for Jesus Christ, don't quit now. Don't turn into a wuss on this. Stand up. Sit tall in the saddle. Ride for the brand. You ride for the brand of Jesus Christ. Don't forget it. We'll see you next week.